cumbia de la
Take it away.
Welcome to Building Bridges. I'm Sebi.
I'm Jan.
And I'm Dave.
And this is a Eurovision podcast for the rest of us.
And we're finally back. It's been so long. We apologize. We haven't done an episode like this in I don't know how long. But we counted 29 interviews. So we've been so busy talking to artists and editing and making social media posts that we haven't had time to sit down, the three of us, and kind of chat and check in with the songs and with the national selections. And then we thought, well, why just have the three of us when we could build bridges across Europe and talk to different content creators and podcasters and YouTubers and everyone else? So we've got a very special guest here today. Her name is Karin. She's in Stockholm. She's particularly fond of Eurovision history, especially the 1975 contest. And she was in Malmö on screen for Eurovision 2024. So I guess I've given it away. So let's welcome Karin Falk. Oh, wait, no, wrong Karin.
We will add the applause effect here. So like we have a live studio audience.
Perfect.
It's Karin from 12P. Hey.
Hey, how are you? How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
And it's not your first time on the podcast, actually. You've been
our
very last jury last year on our Eurovision podcast voting. You gave the final points, you had the final verdict. So it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you too. After the very exciting Malmö Eurovision when we met up and you were on the brink of tears, most of you, it was so intense. Now I was just living it, having a great time at the dress rehearsals, and you guys were going through it behind the scenes, just updating everything and all the drama that was going on. It was crazy. It's crazy.
But I think people don't know that we actually met, it was the day of the final, right? The Saturday in Malmö, and you were with your friends and we all met up and we thought it would be fun, and you know, the whole drama around the contest, especially last year's, wasn't as fun. But yeah, it was fun to see you. That was, I think, the best part of that day.
Likewise. It was intense. It was intense, and like we had a little chat beforehand, and I said I've been standing by the sidelines a bit, not really getting involved with most of the drama and the discussions in the fandom and the community, and it's very intense this year as well. And I think it's a good thing to just take a step back and remind ourselves it's just a friendly competition and it's entertainment, and just enjoy it for what it is.
Take your notes, Euro fans, all of you out there who write toxic comments. It's just a competition. Yes. Enjoy it for what it is.
Speaking of competition, should we start with probably the most, the biggest and probably the most watched competition of this? I don't know if you can call it a Super Saturday, but it was definitely a good Saturday night last night. Should we start with Mello?
Let's get into it.
We should, because there was a big shock for me, but just to refresh everyone's memory, there were six songs in the fourth heat last night. We had Andreas Lundstedt from Alcazar competing by himself. Newcomer Ella, it's 6:30 in the morning, Ella Tiritiello, who I guess is Italian maybe, I have no idea. Tennessee Tears were back, Kai made their metal debut, Amena also debuted, and of course, Mon Selmanov closed the show. And I guess my first question is, did we just see the Eurovision winner last night?
Okay, I'm going to start this off by... I know I've already given the Eurovision community a bit of a bollocking. I'm going to give it another one. I do think that we are, as a community, giving Mon Selmanov too much of a hard time. Because whenever I go on the forums, people are like, oh, why is he there? Ugh, why is it? And I just want to remind us of, I get that he as an artist and as a performer, that we may have as a community somewhat of an adversity towards him, because I mean, he's a white, straight, cisgendered man who's, even if he's not your type, he's obviously very good looking. He has a good voice. He's a great performer. He may feel like a person that we don't really connect with within the community, you know, and we've been, I think he's been involved with like 9 of the 10 last Eurovisions. So he's always there and people are like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing him. But need I remind you that did it take like a week after Måneskin, whom I love, it took like a week after they had gone viral worldwide before that little line of on the Spotify profile, like winners of the Eurovision Song Contest, that was like poof, gone. And Måns Zelmerlöw is not that. He's so proud of this competition. He's so proud of being part of the Eurovision community. He's so proud to have won the contest. He competed several times in Melfest because he really, really loves this type of music. And also, it's also the only arena in Sweden where his sound and what he does, that's the only arena where you can actually perform on that scale. So I do think we've been giving him a bit of a hard time. We should be grateful that he wants to be a part of it and that he's so proud of it. Yeah, just keep that in mind. But did we see a Eurovision winner? I mean, I don't think so. I think my gut feeling was that the song is okay. The performance was good. It's very polished. It's very Måns. It's very Swedish. But aren't we a bit sick and tired of the perfect polished Swedish entry already? Okay, I'm sensing this theme, I mean, throughout the years. I know that whenever we talk about Sweden in Eurovision Song Contest, I do think there is a lot of jealousy because Sweden has performed so well, because we found the formula of a very good generic pop sound and a very catchy melody, a very catchy hook, and a very compelling stage show. But we kind of see the buzzword of the year is, I think, authenticity. Yeah. And if we look at Nemo from last year, if we look at Bambi Thug, if we look at, you know, all these fantastic artists, they have a different authenticity. I do think that Måns is authentic in his very polished sound and look. But I do think that the audience is craving something else.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I get you completely, because I felt, as you said, it's a like almost perfect performance. But everything felt a little bit cold, you know? And everyone says it sounds like Heroes. I mean, I get it has similar vibes. But I was a bit reminded of Caesar Sampson, actually, or maybe even John Lundvik, which is just, you know, a jury song. And the juries would probably love this at Eurovision. But I don't see the televote really going for this. And especially, you know, with people saying, oh, we're tired of Måns. And, you know, people also remember Loreen still winning, you know, for the second time. I just don't think, and Måns didn't even win the televote back in 2015. So I think, yeah.
2015 was also a very intense year with Russia and, I mean, everything that was going on. I think that one of the reasons why he won in 2015 was because Russia's entry was a winning entry, in my opinion. It could definitely have won. And Måns came in and he had this good generic. It was the Switzerland, the Sweden, if you will, of Europe. I'm being very neutral and being very people pleasing and appealing to the broad spectrum of the audience. But yeah, I find it a little bit off putting to also send another Eurovision winner 2 years after Loreen has already won and being like, this is the new Eurovision winner, because I'm not one of those people who are like, oh, if you already won the Eurovision Song Contest, you're not allowed to compete again. Absolutely not. I think go for it. That, I mean, we shouldn't be putting down the media and the music industry and say that you were not allowed to compete again. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because also the data we have had plenty of Eurovision winners who have competed once again and they have fallen flat or not done as well. It has actually only ever happened twice. It has happened with Johnny Logan and Loreen. Those are the only two people who have won the competition twice. And I think one of the reasons why people are like, I don't want previous winners to compete again is because you're scared that they have an already existing fan base who will vote for them. And we want to have that surge of something historical happening again. We are craving historical firsts because we feel like we are at the end of history somehow. We want these firsts to happen all over again. You know me, I like to intellectualize things. And I just don't see it with this entry. I can see it doing well in Eurovision, absolutely. But I want Sweden to send something different.
Yeah.
But I would say that in that case, sometimes the fandom really, you know, they really don't know how to divide people who are actively following the competition are not the same people who are literally voting on the Saturday night while we are talking about final evening, of course. So I would say that even though like somebody wouldn't be up for it, we have to know that the average viewer of the Eurovision Song Contest are tuning in for the final evening. A lot of them, they don't even tune in for semifinals, let's say. I mean, the numbers are saying its own way. So I would say that I'm the one who will always be, you know, if you have a great track, come back, because it's such a great platform. But on the other hand, you are from Sweden. Sweden is, you know, a king of Eurovision, because it really is, you know, they really know how to do it. I would happen to say that probably also a lot of artists who competed in Melodi Festivalen, they didn't have even Eurovision in mind, because they have, you know, the Melodi Festival as itself is such a huge platform in order to promote good music, you know. And this is, you know, Eurovision is just like a cherry on top of the cake. But also at some point, yes, Mons was involved in Eurovision 9 out of 10 times, but yet again, isn't that better than, as you said before, a week after Måneskin won Eurovision in 2021, you know, they somehow tried to delete that moment from their musical history, even though it was Eurovision which, you know, started the fandom of it, the stardom of it. And the same thing happened, you know, with so many artists over the years. So, you know, it's a competition with 70 years of tradition almost. So that's the main reason why I'm always questioning, why is it such a big deal if you have returning artists? Because also a lot of Eurovision journalists, while they are interviewing returning artists, they're always saying, oh, you know, you should come back, or, you know, or just in that case, you know. So I don't know why that hypocrisy is going over, but I would say just maybe because it's Sweden. I would honestly say that really is, you know, just showing a point how you can deliver a great show, as Mello is doing for, you know, quite some time. And some other countries, they're not able to put, you know, a single one performance together just the way how they do it at the Mello. So I would mainly say this could be Sweden again, but yet again, Sweden is the best at what they're doing. Why all of the broadcasters are always asking Sweden for help at the end of the day, you know, if we get back to the Mello. So this is some sort of stuff why we really shouldn't be, you know, in this toxic era, way too much into having problems with people returning back to that stage.
Yeah, oh, T. And I think, I mean, at this point, it's still early in the Eurovision season. Somehow we don't have all the entries yet. But if we look at the odds, I think Sweden was ranked as the winner. And we haven't even picked our entry yet. So this is a year where we don't have a clear winner just yet. And you kind of turn to this juggernaut, Melodifestivalen, because we know that it will at least deliver something that is entertaining, something that we could, like, yeah, it's plausible that it will become a really good Eurovision entry. So yeah, I'm with you. I agree with that. I do think that most of those opinions are from jealous fandoms or jealous fans that are, and it's okay to be jealous of it. I get it. It's fine. You're absolutely allowed to be jealous and a bit bitter that Sweden has done so well, because one of the strengths and the one of the appeals of Eurovision Song Contest is the broad spectrum of music and culture and the exchange and everything. So I get it. If you become sick and tired of seeing the same three countries in the top three. I get it.
Yeah, so I think we've spent lots of time now on Mons. I think we've dissected that.
You can talk about Mons a lot. I think he's super fascinating as an artist.
We could. I'll just say I enjoyed it. But to answer the question, if it's the winner, I'll just say I didn't get the tingles and the vibes I got when I watched Tattoo for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I
didn't feel that. But as the stats guy, I do have some stats really quickly.
Of course you do.
Performing in Malmö is not necessarily a good thing for mellow artists. Before the modern era, only Carola with Främling was the only one to perform in Malmö and go. But of course, it was hosted only in Malmö back then. And in the modern era, only Lena Philipsen, Malena Ernman, Anna Bergendahl, Robin Hjernberg, and Lorraine were winners that performed in Malmö and actually won the competition and went to Eurovision. So do we add a sixth to that this year? Do we add Mons? It's not looking likely historically, just based on the city of performance. Malmö has been a bit unlucky compared to some of the other cities in the tour.
Let's talk about Kai.
Amazing.
Three Finnish dudes, comedy group. Like, I feel like Finland has really dove into the whole let's do a gimmicky spiel thing. And I also, just to give people a bit of a background, there is a large Finnish community in Sweden. These guys are from Österbotten, which is on the eastern coast of Finland, meaning very close to Sweden, where the cultural identity is more Finnish-Swedish than it is Finnish. That's why they speak Swedish, mainly. Like, Swedish is their first language, and that's what they're taught in school and everything. So they do have a bit of a, I wouldn't say like more Swedish, but it's more Swedish than it is Finnish. And that identity of Finnish-Swedish is they're very proud of it. And that comes from, I mean, do we want to get into the history of Sweden colonizing Finland? I mean, we've been fighting over Finland with Russia for hundreds and hundreds of years. But now they're their own country and we love that. We love Finland. Finland hates Sweden, but we love Finland.
No, I love this song and this performance. And I was, you know, every 2 minutes now, I always get, you know, Viska Bara Bastu, Bastu in my head. And yeah, I think it's such a, I know that Sweden will not send it, but I think it would be such a different entry for Sweden. And it's still, you know, you said it was comedic, but it's good, you know, it's high quality. It's not like a trash entry.
Quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one minute I was watching and they had those, you know, those winter coats on. I looked down at my phone for a second and I looked up and everyone had their clothes off and they had towels and they were in the sauna. So,
Finland for you.
There you go.
Yep. No, it was really like fun to watch. It was really like good, like in funny, but good funny. You know what I mean? Like quality funny.
I mean, music is subjective and everything. I tend to really, really hate with all my heart the gimmicky let's do a comedy bit sort of entry. I tend to really, really hate those. But as you said, this had joy. This had, it was just fun and cheerful and also those cultural
authentic
aspects of it. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The keyword,
authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the recipe why they made it, you know, through. And also, like, people enjoyed it in a way because it was sincere, it was authentic, it was, you know, fun. You know, and this is how also the TV viewers could really, you know, get along with it.
Yeah.
And also, may I add, just to give you another little bit of, like I said, you know, I like to intellectualize stuff. You know how I am. I mean, over the past years, since the invasion of Ukraine and Finland joining NATO, Sweden joining NATO, the battle of Eurovision between Kärjä and Loreen, we have become crazy about Finland. Finland has been the baby brother in a way. Like, yeah, they play ice hockey and they're not as good as Canada. We're not really scared of fighting Finland in ice hockey because we're going to, you know, that sort of thing. And Finland has, it's a big, I mean, maybe some Finns listening to this will not disagree with this, but my take is that Finland has that baby brother. They always lose to Sweden. And that is a really bitter feeling to have, which is one of the reasons why the commentator, the Finnish commentator during Eurovision 2023 was like, don't vote for Sweden. We cannot give them any televotes. And they didn't. Like, Finland gave 0 points in the televotes to Sweden, even though Sweden came in second in televotes from all the other nations. And now we see that since this whole, we need to join NATO and we need to stick together, this brotherhood have sort of been created between Sweden and Finland again. And particularly Swedes are turning to Finland a lot more because, you have a good school system. Maybe we should take after that. We've always seen ourselves as top of the class when it comes to like homelessness, social welfare, blah, 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 blah. And like, Finland is the happiest country in the world. Why is that? They have such a good school system. They have such good healthcare. The homeless problem is a lot less severe than it is in Sweden. You know, so we're kind of turning to Finland and start to appreciate them a lot more, which is about time, if you ask me.
And also the battle of this year, we didn't get there yet, but like while we were speaking of the betting odds, again, we have again this Sweden-Finland fight at the end of the day. Again, you know, this is going to be super, super fun, but I would say that we should talk more about that maybe in the upcoming weeks, because once we have all the songs, maybe it would be more accurate.
I hope it's gonna be too traumatic for Finns if it's the split screen again and then losing to Sweden again. I hope that won't be the case.
Kärjä was one of the interval acts in the first first Melody Festival heat. So yes, I mean, we love Kärjä.
He was in Iceland last night as well. He's just touring through the national finals. It's his tour.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that for him.
And making very inappropriate pictures at the geysers in Iceland as well on his social media. It's hilarious. So if you haven't seen that, go look for it. So now, I guess, now should we move on to Ella? Poor Ella, who I thought qualified, but didn't.
But she went to the semifinals.
Yeah. So she might make it. She might make it. She's got a 1 in 5 shot, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, she was adorable. I think she's super cute. Loreen was one of the songwriters, and it was in Swedish, which is not very common for Melodifestivalen.
Absolutely shocking. Mm-hmm. You guys don't send your Swedish songs through. I don't know why.
I know.
Well, Barabarabastu made it.
And you know, the irony of
that was the first
this,
one, right? The first Swedish song that went directly to the final. No?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
And also, ironically, the last time we heard Swedish in Eurovision Song Contest was in 2012 by Finland.
Yeah. Nerja Blunda.
Such a beautiful song, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song. I have this thing. I rarely listen to lyrics. Mm-hmm. I know. I don't know. My boyfriend said something. Maybe you're on the spectrum. I was like, maybe I am. I need a good melody. I need a good hook. Maybe that's why I love Eurovision so much. Because I don't need to understand the language, because that's not what I listen to. I did find the entry a bit dull and a bit bland and a bit, every second Swedish summer song sounds like this. She is adorable. She has a great voice. I can clearly hear the Zara Larsson inspiration for her. I want nothing but the best for her. That's what I'll say. It's a 2 out of 5 song for me.
Yeah. I think overall, like, we had Måns and Kai were like the clear favorites, like the two standouts. And then I think, you know, the third who also made it through was a bit arbitrary almost, because it wasn't that strong, the other four songs.
I don't remember it. Like, Kai, I didn't particularly like Kai, but it's like, I remember the performance and the song. Måns, of course. For me, my third would have been Andreas. I really liked Vicious. That was a fun opener. So when Ella got the finale qual, it kind of shocked me a bit because I thought Swedes would stick with, you know, someone, because he's so famous and he's part of Alcazar and all this. But yeah, so shocking, a bit shocking.
I think, I don't know how you guys see this. I had a little bit of an icky feeling with Andreas because we talked to him on the podcast and we know what the song means, but if you just tune in, it had a bit of Predator vibes. And I don't mean that, you know, with any accusation, but like, you know, there's the horny genre, especially in UMK. But I think in this case, it looked a bit weird. You know, if Benjamin was this with Hoidamut or Erika Wigman is doing it, you know, it has a different vibe than what Vicious had. It had a bit of an icky feeling to it.
It was very Pride 2025.
And oh, I love that very much.
He is one of the best gay icons that we have in Sweden. I love that. I think it was almost like a version of Dance You Off with the laser, the red lasers, but like make it more gay. And somehow, sadly, it doesn't appeal to people in the same way. I like that sort of very dirty, almost a little bit horny, but maybe it's too in your face. I mean, Ich Komme with Erica that you're going to talk about later on, that still has a very comedy element to it. It's fun and joyous, but this was a bit too serious, maybe.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but I felt decent song. It's not going to qualify.
Well, I guess the next show that we should have a look at, I guess in terms of importance, would definitely be the show that actually picked a Eurovision song last night. And for that, we have to go even further north and a bit closer to me, to Iceland.
Yeah.
We had Vibe, who I guess won Sigma Kepnum with, is it Roa?
Roa, I think.
Yeah. I feel like I should roll my R a bit more, but yeah. So what did you guys think of the winning performance in Iceland? And I don't mean Karja.
Do you want me to go?
Go ahead.
I have opinion.
Sure.
I thought, okay, positives first. Let's do a compliment sandwich. The violence that they incorporated, that was fun. Overall, I thought it was giving Junior Eurovision Song Contest. It was giving Boys Night Out. It was giving School Cabaret.
A bit of Jedward too, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole... And I get it. Sweden sent a pair of twins last year as well, so I shouldn't say anything. But they were a bit more gimmicky. And I'm sorry, I wasn't living. I wasn't.
Yeah, I think it's a nice performance. I like that it's an Icelandic. I think it's always a plus, especially from Nordic countries, because, I mean, Karin, you can confirm that they are very hesitant to send songs that are not in English, especially Sweden. But it's good at least to have the Nordic brothers represent and showcase their languages. So I think that's a plus. And yeah, I think it's energetic. I think they're in the first half. I think they might open the semi, you know, to be a very fresh start. But I don't know if this is a qualifier necessarily. I think gimmicky in a way, but it's not too gimmicky at the same time. It's not like a joke entry. It's upbeat. I like it actually, but yeah, I don't know how far it can go. I would love for Iceland to qualify again. Sorry.
Always. Iceland is one of those countries that they have repeatedly sent good songs and they just haven't qualified, and I feel like they've been so overlooked by so many fans.
Yeah.
I do think, and in that way it doesn't surprise me that they would choose this kind of song, because I mean, as you said, it's an Icelandic, it's very, we have time off from school, let's do something crazy. Let's try what Finland did with a very party song in Icelandic. I get it. And I took a quick listen to some of the other entries, and the song that ended up in second place was that heavy metal song.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if this was their second choice, I'm not surprised that they chose Vibe, because that heavy metal song was not it.
It was old fashioned. Yeah.
No, it was not good metal. Exactly, because I do like rock and I do like metal, but that was not the type of metal that is appealing to the larger mass. It's too pessimistic. It's too... No, I did not like it. So I get why they chose this. It's fun. It's joyous. But I don't think the song is strong enough. I'm sorry. I don't see it qualifying.
Yeah.
Just, I haven't listened to all the qualifying of all the songs from semifinal one yet. But this is not like... it's not a strong song. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
One thing that I appreciate the most about it is that I hope they're not putting it in English for the matter of Eurovision. So
we have
an Icelandic part. Because Speaking of, we were just chatting during the song of Icelandic national final. I will never make it. So, and one of the highlights obviously was also Hedda Björk performing it. And while we realize she's performing Scared of Heights in Icelandic, which again,
so
I'm not
much
pronouncing
better.
It in Icelandic. It's so much better. So, you know, it's not necessarily always a good thing that you translate your song into English. You were saying it just before, you don't really put attention to the lyrics because you go for music and you don't have to understand it really, you know, to get it there. Because I would say that it's completely different song while you're doing it in different languages. This is something that I mean, it's dancey, it's nice, you know. I'm not really sure again about qualifying chances though, but I really do appreciate it, and I hope they will keep it in Icelandic for the matter of Eurovision, because it really is something that I really enjoy about 2025 edition of the contest. Is there's so many songs keeping it into own languages.
Yeah,
this is fantastic. I remember let's say we were talking about 2014. Was like what, 3-4 songs in their own languages?
Yeah.
And the rest was English.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah,
and that was hideous, you know. And this is something that I really enjoy, because this is so much, you know, this is what Eurovision is all about, trying to use this 3 minutes. There are so many people who can, you know, fall in love with the language or with a culture. They go, you know, they go and they discover. It's not an excuse of, oh, they understand the language. No, because it's all about the energy they deliver on the stage. And this is why I'm so happy for Iceland that they picked, you know, Icelandic song. Of course, the, you know, music taste is very to be judged on its own. But like, yet again, I think it's a really, really good thing. And once again, huge shout out to Hedda Björk with this fantastic medley, which I enjoyed so fucking much.
And thank you for the segue into what I was going to say. How, and I mean this with no disrespect, because I love Iceland. I've been to Iceland. I'm very happy they chose a song in Icelandic this year. It's all good. And from one cold island rock in the North Atlantic to another, to think that here we could put off a show as slick and as beautiful as they did last night in Reykjavik. I mean, they've got 300,000 people on their island. I've got 500,000 on mine. We could never put, like, we'd be lucky to have 2 lights and a shoestring in an arena. Like, it would be horrible. Like, they did such a good show. The fact that what I'm remembering today isn't any of the 6 songs, it's Hedda Björk and Kaarja. That's what I was excited for last night. I didn't get any excitement for any of the 6 songs. I think Vibe will bring a lot of energy to Basel, but I don't know if we're going to see them on Saturday night. Let's put it that way. But anyway, great show overall.
They chose the best they had, I would say.
Yeah.
And yeah, the English translations sometimes are very icky, especially if they were written in Icelandic and then they're translated to English. It just loses all the charisma, as we said with Scared of Heights as well.
Yeah, oh my goodness, yeah. It's like, I'm just still saying 2 different songs.
Yeah. Song for Kepning also have this policy of they only allow the songwriters to be Icelandic, or at least Icelandic citizens to participate, which is, I mean, if you look at, for instance, there are plenty of Swedish songwriters, you know,
everywhere
having
else.
Their fingers in a lot of Eurovision pies all over Europe.
Yeah.
But Iceland is trying to very... And, I mean, that has to do with the fact that it's such a small country. And as you said, Dave, it's 300,000 people. So they really want to maintain that music industry. And they're good at it. I just wish that they... It's never a good sign when the interval act is better than the actual songs, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because that means, like, okay, so the songs, the entry that you've chosen... It's not going to outshine, say, the most generic Swedish entry. And I do wish to see Iceland. I feel like my Iceland has been so overlooked by the Eurovision community overall.
Oh my goodness.
Ever since Daði. I think Daði is the latest one, but I think I'm still upset that they... How did Greta Salome not qualify with Hear Them Coming?
My face, Stockholm, that time when I didn't hear Iceland, I was like, the fuck? That was, I mean... Yeah, we're already explicit episode by now, so you don't have to.
I'm still pissed that Selma didn't win in 1999, honestly. Oh my God. I'm sorry, exactly. Sweden, but like it was Iceland's turn this time.
You want to know? I found this really, really old article clipping where they did like a review of the songs from 1999, like from that evening, like the Tonight songs, and they gave Tusen och Natt is the Swedish title for it. What is it? What's the English title?
Take Me to Your Heart.
Take Me to Your Heaven. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And it got 2 out of 5. They said, decent song, not interesting.
Again, it's Take Me to Your Heaven, in my opinion, you know, one of the greatest songs, Eurovision songs of all time, but in Swedish.
In Swedish.
Because, yes, Tusen och Natt. Yeah.
And just to, like, going back to what you said about singing it in your own language, I remember as a kid when the rules were that you had to, in the Swedish Melody Festival, you had to compete in Swedish. Like, that was such an exciting moment when the winning entry switched to English. And the few times that we won, say, Take Me to Your Heaven, when she switched back to Swedish, when she was singing her encore.
Yeah.
Winner, the winner reprise in Eurovision. That was fantastic. I enjoy this performance way more than the competing one, because it's great, because the last chorus, when you know it became so messy, you know, on that stage, and when they switched to Swedish, it was fantastically done.
Yeah
So we love Iceland for keeping it Icelandic. Do it again. Do it more. I mean,
do it always.
You have me in your corner.
Keep going. Yes.
Keep going. I'm rooting for you.
Yes. And you're not going to get just 3 points in the semifinal this time. I think you get a little bit more at least, you know? So that's good.
Or 5.
So did you follow any of the other shows we had last night? We had Germany and Portugal.
I have given them a listen. I had a very exciting morning. I put my alarm clock on and I gave it a listen. I also listened to Italy's since they picked... I mean, the winner of Sanremo Festival is not going to... No.
I think we can dedicate a minute or two to the tea from Italy this week, because Sebi and Jan understand Italian too, but like for me, not being European, I think Italy is kind of like my home base, kind of. I relate most to that. I've got lots of friends there and everything. So, and I watched all 25 fucking hours of Sanremo, so I really feel like... You know, I deserved better than what we got, and I think the best part of all of it was the morning after, when Elodie went on that that morning show and just sounded off at how crap it was, and how the women in Sanremo this year were not judged fairly, and because like how in that 29 songs, how do you have no women in the top 5, and how are none of the fan favorites in the top 5? It just boggles my mind. I get that Sanremo is not a Eurovision show. It's its own thing, which is why Ali went into this with concerts booked the entire week of Eurovision, because A, you know, you're one of 29, you don't expect to win, that's one thing, but also B, if you do win, you know, you're big in Italy, you don't necessarily care about Eurovision, you might not even know what Eurovision is. But This Lucio Corsi, I can't stand the song. It sounds like something they would have sent in 1968, and then back then it would have come in last place at Eurovision. I really worry about Italy.
I kind of like the song, but I was raised on that shit. I was raised on that glam rock, David Bowie sound. So I love that. I mean, there's a huge 70s flair going through the Eurovision qualifiers now, and I love that, but I do understand that it sounds dated. And when I saw that Lucio was going to compete, and I saw the comments from Italians, they were so apologetic, and Italians are usually not apologetic. They're usually so proud of the entry that they're going to send. I mean, the Italian Eurovision fans, but they were like, he's cantatore, meaning he's a singer-songwriter. He has a very peculiar style. It's not a traditional Eurovision entry, but like, if you just give it a listen and give it a shot, I definitely see this being one of those. Do you remember Spain with that wonderful flamenco entry? It was fantastic, but it was just not very approachable, and it just did not relate to so many people. It was really, what was it? Was it
2023.
It was beautiful and so artistic, but it was not very relatable.
No, and most Italians still aren't over the mouse, the topo that he took on covers night. I'm still seeing comments like, that fucking mouse, I can't believe the mouse. And now there are memes
you
going around.
You have to tell me, what's this?
So he, so on covers night, on Friday night, of course, every artist brings another artist on to sing with them. And Lucio, in his makeup and everything, so same shtick he's been doing, he had a puppet of a mouse, of a famous cartoon mouse, at least, because he sang Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu.
Oh.
And this mouse, when it was created in the 50s, for the first year or two the mouse was a cartoon, was voiced by Domenico Modugno. So I guess that was the link. But of course, if you're not 75 years old, you might not know that. I had to look it up, obviously, because that's what I do. But yeah, there's so many memes going around about this stupid mouse that he brought. Like, people aren't over it. Like, most artists obviously brought like an actual human. Well, yeah, they brought human beings who are famous in Italy to the covers night, and then, you know, they wheel out this little window for a puppeteer with a mouse. Like, it just looked really bad. And now there are memes going around of like that mouse with the Eurovision logo. It's a little joke within a joke.
No, I just wanted to say that maybe the advantage of Italy is that usually whatever they send, it's you know, the audience enjoys it because it's Italy. Point. And I think this is the only country in Eurovision as a competition that even maybe if it doesn't sound safe or anything, I think everybody's going crazy for it because it's always in Italian. It's always like regarding Italian music, maybe if it's not a popular choice, it can gain some popularity over the months, you know, while preparing for the Eurovision stage. But I would say that this is something that I'm not entirely sure it will do okay, but it won't do as super bad as a lot of people think that it will.
Yeah.
Because like, just because it's not maybe a song which goes on a first listen, but maybe, you know, again, people who vote are not usually the ones who are following, you know, the whole mess from December, from Fikmason.
Yeah.
We have to remind ourselves for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Eurovision fans are underestimating this because it is, I think the juries will like this. And I think it's usually Italy's weakness are the juries a little bit more. And
yeah.
I also think Lucio is, even if you don't remember the song, you will remember him. If you watch 26 songs and then, you know, he pops up in the recap, you'll remember this performer for sure. Like, I didn't even bother with all the Sanremo songs, but Lucio just stuck out to me when I watched all the clips because of his personality.
Appearance,
yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah,
he has integrity. The song has integrity. And I do think they are going to be given, just as Sweden is given pretty much every year, people are going to give it a listen because you expect it to be good.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a bathroom break song. So people are going to listen to it and maybe take it to their hearts a lot more than they would had it been from, I don't know, Estonia.
Yeah.
Also another nation who is always overlooked in the Eurovision,
yeah,
in my opinion.
All right, but shall we move on? We talked about the semifinals, you know, in Germany and in Portugal, and you took some notes, I can see.
shall we start with Germany, who had their, is it Chef Sacca, Sebi?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what, 14 songs became 9? Interesting show. I didn't see the show, I saw the recap, and I was like, oh, I picked out like 3 songs that I liked. 3 of them were the 3 that got cut. So, I'm out of this conversation entirely because all the ones that went through are the ones that I thought were the most generic, uninteresting ones, and my favorites were cut last night. So, yeah, Karen, if you want to start, go ahead.
I gave the qualifying songs a listen on Eurovisionworld.com or .org, and they have the scoring system where you can see where fans have scored them, how many stars out of 0 to 5. Mm-hmm. So I took a listen and I was surprised that it was as good as it was, in my opinion, because I don't think Germany really have, I don't think they've delivered as well as they could have over the last years. But yeah, the one of the songs that was like top rated was Cosby, also 70s flair. And I wrote down Daddy Issue. Daddy Issues, I get cynical when I hear this. It reminds me of Evanescence and Kelly Clarkson. And wow. I was, because it, and that's the sad thing, because it's a really heartfelt song about how her father left her. And but when I hear that, it's almost like I become cynical when I hear that. I get a little bit, oh, it's too authentic. It's too out there. It's too much hard on your sleeve in a way. So yeah, I wasn't really feeling it. My favorite was the Great Leslie, because that had that 2000s Arctic Monkeys Franz Ferdinand sound, and I was living
also
for
retro
that.
Vibes. Everything is retro a little bit this year.
Thank you. I told you, I'm a rock girl. I'm a rock girl. And then also was, of course, the nightclub. Let's talk about the nightclub.
Yeah.
Germany doing fun bardcore. What were they going to crusade later on that night? I wrote down that it's bardcore. It's missing peaks and valleys. It goes in hard from like the first note. So it's like it goes hard. It's fun. Too gimmicky, perhaps, because I did not think the vocals were strong enough.
Yeah, I know it's not an excuse. I mean, it's a common excuse, but they did say they had problems with the sound mixing and the in-ears. So maybe that was part of it. But a lot of people had that last night. And it's actually a very poor thing for Germany, who is one of the richest countries in Europe, to have such bad sound mixing as they had yesterday.
It's a shame. It's a shame. I also really liked, was it Mos Karma, or was it the first song that qualified? Guy with a feather boa, that Broadway ballad, soul thing. Maskina, that's it. I felt like several of the songs were, these are movie montage songs. These are Bridget Jones is left again. She's mad about the boy. Bridget Jones's baby montage songs, sort of. Which is probably why I liked also the Baller song. So Baller and Butler were my favorites.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's going to be between the nightclub and Baller, just because it's 100% televote. And I think they will actually send nightclub because, you know, Feuerschwanz is a very famous band. And Baller are, you know, two Austrians. Germans usually don't vote for Austrians. And yeah, I don't think anyone else really has a chance. It's mostly like a more of a pop ballad lineup besides those two. So yeah.
I feel like that's a shame because I liked the glam rock.
Lord of the Lost.
Lord of the Lost. I liked the song, ended up lost.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, don't go for that. I think actually sending something, doing the Baller song will be a better chance at actually so achieving too. Like top 15, top 10, maybe even higher than that.
Well, and again, talking about native languages, I don't think there were many in German in the lineup. And the one that was, Weg von dir, was immediately cut. And that was one of my favorite songs. Sebi, unless I missed something, I don't think any of the ones that qualified are in German, are they?
No, Baller is in German.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Nightclub is partly in German. So actually, we have a pretty strong chance of at least hearing German again. Okay. Not just from Finland, from an actual German-speaking country.
Yeah, and for obvious reasons, Germany is always reluctant to send something in German because people don't like the sound of German.
Yeah.
And I love it that they now dare to do that because it's a beautiful language.
Austrian dialect.
Thank you.
But how, like you were saying, like how can such a big country, I mean, 83, 84 million people be struggling? Like these, some of these songs are okay, but there's no big standouts here. I mean, is it like the UK? Like the reputation of Eurovision is so down in Germany that no big artists want to go? I don't understand why Germany struggles so much. They really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I think it's the same problem that Sweden Sweden has. I know that Melfest is still considered one of the top qualifiers, but it's very obvious to me that Melfest, quality-wise, has gone down a lot over the years. Same songwriters, same type of songs. And I get that it's SVT, it's public service. They kind of have a checklist of all the genres and all the demographics that they have to hit. But I do fear that they are not people, the very, very good songwriters are not interested in competing in Melfest. And I do feel like that is the same thing with UK and Germany and even Norway.
Norway has lost a lot in the last few years. Yeah.
Really, really struggling. And why that is, I'm not sure. I think it's Eurovision is not the same. It's not status anymore. It's not a feather in your cap. I mean, again, Måneskin. They removed that from their profile as soon as they could. As soon as they could stand on their own two legs and not rely on Eurovision wins.
Yeah. I mean, Stefan Raab should just get on the phone with some big names and say, hey, look, here's this opportunity. Do you have anything? Instead of having this show that, you know, might get them another bottom five at the end of the day. You know,
I was expecting that because, like, once the news were there that, like, Stefan Raab is taking over, you know, we were like, okay, finally, maybe Germany is finishing this era of what the actual is that while having their national selection, but it doesn't really go into that direction, I would say. Yes, and also, like, if we go back to Melfest, it's pretty much the same names all the time. And also, like, when you see some of the songwriters having more songs, you know, that what exactly can you expect, you know, from the upcoming shows, which is not necessarily bad for the viewership. As you said, they have to hit the specific demographic ones. But at the end of the day, yes, I wouldn't say that the current editions are staying here forever regarding songs and hits, etc. There's so many songs that they will be forgotten after Mellow. You know, and there's some of the songs from the 20 plus years ago, people still remembers them and they didn't win, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that, was it last week when Gräsela qualified?
Yeah.
And it's the first time in years, many years, that a debuting artist and debuting songwriters qualify. And he received the most votes of all during
that
evening.
Which is great.
Yeah. It's fantastic, and he has such a good voice, and that is my personal favorite this far. And I do hope that at least SVT looks at this and like, oh, Sweden wants something different. We like music. We're a music nation. Music is one of the major exports that we have. We want to see something new, and the same for Germany and the UK. I mean, UK is one of the greatest music nations in the world, and they cannot deliver a good song. It's astounding to me. And also, when you look at that, oh, Gräsela, the glam, rocky, really, really good vocalist, he qualified. Yeah, well, Nemo won because they are an amazing artist. Yeah, and exactly. The song was so special and interesting, and they are such a good vocalist. Like, if you don't understand why Nemo won and why Gräsela qualified and received the most votes, I cannot help you. Like, exactly. That's...
Yeah, I actually think if Sweden really wants to win, I think Gräsela is the smarter option than Måns, to be honest.
I agree.
Yeah. Like, how if Thomas Gesson is writing 15,000 songs a year, how can any of them be unique and authentic and meaningful to any artist who didn't write it themselves?
Yeah. Exactly. And I do think that Melodifestivalen needs a good revamp. And one of the rules that they should employ is, as a songwriter, you're only allowed to put your name on one song. That's it. You're only allowed to compete with one song.
And also, you know what's the funniest thing? Like, you have so many songs in different national selections across Europe, Swedish ones and a good ones, that never make the cut to Melo.
Exactly.
And they usually, their songs, they do well in other national selections, you know, but they never make it to Melo because there's always, you know, something going on here. You have the same faces on the sofas in the green room. You have, you know, which is okay and which is good, but like it doesn't give any diversity into that. And also it's really weird. Also, if I refer to what you said back before, Sweden, Germany, UK, these are all, you know, European, main guys for the music, you know? Oh, well, Sweden is not really struggling with it, but like UK and Germany, why do they struggle so much while they have one of the biggest markets, you know, with the biggest names, and they could go literally with any record saying, oh, this is a huge hit. It could also work as a Eurovision one. Not all of them, of course, but like this is what I find the most fascinating. How do you struggle finding a, you know, appropriate song for Eurovision while you're having this chart-topping hits all around the globe? This is what fascinates me. Why and why is that the case, really? But don't we shouldn't go too far into that, but like just a thought.
Do you have any thoughts on Portugal? That is the last show. It started the latest and it took the longest. Any thoughts on Portugal at all?
Well, they had 10 songs last night. The public, I believe, or most of the public anyway, picked their top five. And a sixth song went through as a wild card, which I thought was interesting. That was Aramastor by Peculiar, which I thought was a bit of a different song and certainly stood out. So I'm glad that one got through. But I'm generally not a fan of Festival da Canção every year. I find a lot of the songs are very similar. Like if you like fado, it's great. If you don't like the slower fado, you're going to see a lot of repetition. And like some of the ones that I thought were a bit different didn't get through. And then some of the ones that I thought were the least interesting are the ones that the Portuguese public kind of gravitated to. So yeah, it wasn't a show for me last night, but hopefully one of the three of you liked it.
I usually don't really follow Festival da Canção until they have a winner, because I trust Portugal. They choose a quality song and they choose, you know, a good vocalist always. And this year I only listened to Josh, who is the favorite, I think. He was good, but the performance was not it. He was just, you know, sort of flying, but not really. He was hanging onto a pole stick, but then he was like levitating a little bit. So yeah, I think this would be a good song to send still, but the performance needs to be completely redone.
Colin, I agree.
See you nodding. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was the one. I only had two songs that really resonated with me, and that was one of them. I like the effect of him holding on to that pole. I think that's really cool. The whispers, the whispering in the song made it sound also quite modern, and which I think is something that Portugal has struggled with, that when they send this really heartfelt ballads that they usually do, sometimes it doesn't come across as modern. And whenever they have sent something that is modern, it hasn't appealed to the Eurovision audiences, which has always shocked
me. Telemovies, for instance.
Exactly. Yeah. Love that. I suppose my other favorite was, is his name Bluey?
Yeah.
You know, with the two dancers with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm. That was a special moment, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I understand that some people may find it a bit, oh, is he trying to just win sympathy points by having two dancers that are that have Down syndrome? But I work with people who with Down syndrome, and they are usually so aware of how people look at them, even though we love them, of course. And the visibility, first of all, the dancers were great. They did a really, really good job. And I read through the lyrics about how it's about visibility and how you can overcome struggles in your life. And I felt like that was a really genuine and authentic message.
Just the title of the song, Ninguém, which means nobody. And when you realize that in the context, it's heartbreaking.
Exactly. And to have, two very visible people with Down syndrome, it's a very strong message to send across. And I found that very, very heartwarming. And good voice, very soulful. I think that if those are the only two options, I know we have other songs that will qualify, but if Josh and Bluey were the only two options, that's, they have to do a really good stage show for us to remember. So Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Oh yeah, do you want to talk about those quickly? It was kind of last week, but we can.
Armenia, I wrote down cool guy, weak vocals, question mark. Yeah. He sings in cursive. It's given me Boys Night Out. It's given me FIFA 25. He's living his gladiator fantasy. Good for him, not for me.
Yeah, I found it a bit old-fashioned too. It's a 2008 kind of Eurovision song, you know, and I hate those Gerson lyrics. I'm a survivor ready to... No, staying alive. I'm a survivor staying alive. And I'm like, oh my God.
Super.
Yeah.
And then Azerbaijan, I wrote down high production value. It has similar vibes and the beats as Mons had, that sort of... very fast tempo. The string instrument, I don't know the name of it, but that's very cool. I love it when we incorporate something ethnic and cultural into our entries. And it's also a little bit Daft Punk, Get Lucky. It was cute. Maybe it sounds a bit, I wouldn't say old-fashioned, but maybe a bit...
2000s.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. 2000s.
Not too old, because we're all young here. We,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting with Azerbaijan because they seem like they're on this kick to really pull from Azeri talent and stop the reliance on foreign songwriters. And I haven't looked, but just hearing the song, I would assume that they've abandoned that because it does not sound very Azeri. They've just kind of, like you said, they've thrown in some, like, I guess, ethnic noises, some ethnic, like one ethnic instrument maybe. Which I think if it was 2009 that they did that when they came third, I think, right? With like a very Swedish song, but like let's throw in just a few little sounds to make it sound Azeri. I think they've kind of gone back to that because, you know, they really want to qualify again.
I think then we've talked about all the songs. And yeah, Karin, thank you so much for joining us once again. Do you have any final words, anything else you would like to say? Any other thoughts?
I think we'll just reiterate what we said, that I know it's a really intense year. We're coming off of 2024, that was also really, really intense. But you know what? We're just having fun. Let's try to have fun. It's just joyous and fun. And just the fact that we're sitting here, I'm in Stockholm, you're in Austria, and all over the world, all over Europe, that, and we can talk about this and nod along and totally agree with each other, just proves that we... love this competition and love each other. So just keep the toxicity out of it. Come on. Come on, you guys.
Absolutely.
And be nice to Mons. He's you know, he has
a revolution on it.
He's trying. He's running a revolution, guys. Come on.
Right, you know, the thing which is really kicking in his song is the last, you know, what, 15, 20 seconds when there's this switch. This got me going always, no matter what everyone else is saying. So,
yeah, it was epic. I love epic.
Yeah.
All right, Karin, I think if you're up for it, we will see you again on our podcast jury this year.
Of course.
Everyone go listen to Torf-P. Especially if you speak Swedish.
That would help, yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you're learning Swedish, that's actually very good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that. I'm doing an episode on Moldova soon, so because I miss Moldova.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. Before we are running out of time.
We'll get cut off any minute. But
yeah.
Thank you so much once again.
And
I'll see you in Stockholm, Jan.
Yes.
See you.